Episode 101, Oregon, the Struggle for Possession, Part 3.
Welcome to the Principles in Practice podcast. This is where we discuss biblical principles for life and learning. I'm your host, Heather Hall, and this is my co-host,
Brian Hall.
It's great to have you back at the Principles in Practice Biblical Classical Homeschooling podcast. We're moving forward with the account of Oregon's providential history as documented by William Barrows in his book, Oregon, A Struggle for Possession. If you missed chapters 1 and 2, check out episodes 95 and 98. Episodes on Oregon's providential history are debuting on Fridays. In the description for the podcast, you can find a link to donate to our podcast and help keep it operating. And also, you can go to principledacademy.com to find the link for donating as well. We appreciate all of your support and prayers for us. Chapter 3, France Sells Her Claims. France was only second to Spain in the extent of her inflated claims in the New World. The Treaty of Ryswick conceded to her all the country whose waters flowed into the Atlantic from the Penobscot north to Hudson Bay. This includes not only the basin of which that bay is the reservoir, but also the basin of the Great Lakes, emptying through the St. Lawrence. Down the western slope of the Hudson Bay Basin, there come the Red River waters of central Minnesota and those of Lake Winnipeg, fed by the Saskatchewan and Assiniboine that spring from the melting snows where the Rocky Mountains look down on the Pacific. So far west on the rim of the basin was a French claim conceded in the old Dutch palace of Ryswick. There was also conceded to her all the great western valley, which lies between the Alleghenies and the Rocky Mountains, and whose drainage runs by New Orleans, omitting so much as lies south of the 33rd degree of latitude on the east of the Mississippi, and so much as feeds the head springs of the Arkansas and territory south of it. This immense French domain in America would more than cover all the map of Europe. The Peace of Ryswick was brief. Wars soon followed between the parties in both the Old World and the New, and matters soon came again to the Council Table of Kings. This time it was in 1713 at Utrecht, another Dutch town, and the prominent parties present by their ministers were Anne, Queen of Great Britain, and Louis XIV of France. France, once so imperious, had been humbled by failure to absorb the Spanish in the French crown and by the adverse issues of war in North America. Moreover, Louis was now 75 years old, and the shadows of age were falling across his brilliant court of Versailles. He put his name to the Treaty of Utrecht, but not with the bold iron hand that had throttled kings and pushed thrones aside. The signature is the unsteady scrawl of age, as when old men, nursed and pillowed up on the dying bed, sign their last will and testament. That signature gave back to Great Britain the Hudson Bay Basin from rim to rim, Newfoundland and Nova Scotia, the poetic Acadia. There and then, in the old halls of Utrecht, France began to give up her chances on the Pacific by yielding those immense regions on the Atlantic. The tide had turned, and now it went out as with the rapidity with which it was wont to leave her former bay of Fundy. Struggles followed the Concord at Utrecht, and they were between courts and cabinets, prime ministers and ambassadors, armies in Europe and armies in the new continent. The brilliant uniform of the European mingled within the feathers and paint and scalp lock of the Indian along the forests and rivers and lakes of our then border land. More and more the destinies of battle turned one way till that fatal September day on the plains of Abraham at Quebec in 1759. That was the Waterloo for France in North America. And in the settlement afterward, by the Treaty of Paris, 1763, she was humiliated to yield all her possessions east of the Mississippi. That is, she then lost the eastern slope of the Mississippi Valley, the Canadas, and New Brunswick. After much diplomatic delay, more than 3 years, while from time to time the hostile negotiators felt for their swords again, Great Britain allowed France to retain three little islands off the coast of Newfoundland, not the area of two Yankee townships, where she might build fishermen's huts and dry her nets. Only the assignment of St. Helena to Napoleon suggests so great a fall or equals so great a humiliation. About 100 days before this painful transfer, France secretly made over to Spain all her territorial claims on the west of the Mississippi. Under one of those terrible pressures of war, when sometimes a strong nation is no more capable of resistance than an iron ship in an ice pack, she parted with that half of a grand empire. She feared, and probably foresaw, that Great Britain would finally take all, and so put this beyond the reach of her grasping victor. In her successive generations, France never forgave herself for losing the ancient Louisiana. She chafed under the memories of the Plains of Abraham, and she watched to recover herself from a step forced and inevitable in the fickle fortunes of war. All through and following our Revolution, while she was friendly, her leading statesmen were alert and hopeful for chances that would reinstate her in that valley. The bold and almost defiant intrigues of Genet, and her gold freely used between Pittsburgh and New Orleans as bribes to bring about secession, are evidences of her wishes and of her endeavors. Therefore, it agreed well with national ambition, as well as with the gigantic schemes of Napoleon when he recovered from Spain in 1800, the western half of that ancient Louisiana. The King of Spain, who owned this part of old Louisiana, married his daughter to the poor Duke of Parma, and he was not so rich in territory as his wife was proud and ambitious. Adjoining their pretty domain was the Kingdom of Tuscany, owned by France. To please, therefore, his spirited daughter, now a duchess in the small Duchy of Parma, the King of Spain exchanged with Napoleon Louisiana for Tuscany, and then the Duchy of Parma and Tuscany were combined into the Kingdom of Etruria for the royal son-in-law and his royal wife. So, as in so many great matters, there was a woman in the case, and half an empire in America was sold off to buy for her a wedding present. Thus, the long-cherished ambition of France was realized, and she again had in the New World more than Saint-Pierre and the Great and Little Miquelon, her three islands tethered off the coast of the continent. It was the ambition of Napoleon to restore a grand new France in the recovered Louisiana. It was to be for France her empire of the West, the India of France, to balance the India of Great Britain. Its area and natural resources and its openness to the commercial world were commensurate with the daring wish and plans of Napoleon. He framed a government for it, appointed a board of officers, and gathered an army and navy for its escort, and then waited a year to evade the watchful eye of England and ship the whole to the mouth of the Mississippi. But the mistress of the seas was too strong and too wary for him, and he did not dare venture. Impatient of delay, suffering severe reverses and many anxieties in the broadening wars of that most eventful period, and solicitors how the young France of the West might be able to keep her domains and put on manly years, especially if old France should come into adverse emergencies, he sold the province to the United States. In the old world trade, Tuscany and Louisiana were reckoned equal, at 100,000 francs each, but we paid 75,000, 15 millions of dollars, including 2.5 millions of French debt due to Americans, which the United States assumed. It was with reference to this and earlier ownerships of Louisiana by France that de Tocqueville, in his Democracy in America, made his lament, the old refrain of La Belle France. There was a time when we also might have created a French nation in the American wilds to counterbalance the influence of the English upon the destinies of the New World. France formerly possessed a territory in North America scarcely less extensive than the whole of Europe. The three greatest rivers of that continent then flowed within her dominions: Louisbourg, Montmorency, Duquesne, St. Louis, Vincennes, New Orleans, are words dear to France. For 2.5 years, that magnificent region was again nominally in the hands of its ancient owner, and for so long a time France was the claimant of Oregon under the old Spanish title. As will appear by and by, the United States claimed Oregon under the old Franco-Spanish title, while Great Britain denied the validity of it in the final settlement of the Oregon question. Here, therefore, in our purchase of the Louisianas, France disappears from the list of competitors for that Pacific prize. Only three now hold the course of struggle: Russia, England, and the United States. Thank you for joining me for this providential account of Oregon, and you can expect Chapter 4 to drop next Friday. I look forward to joining me for that as well. And listen, if you want to learn more about homeschooling with a providential view of history and how to reason and think biblically, then join the Biblical Classical Homeschool Experience at principledacademy.com. Get on the wait list, and you'll be the first to know when the doors open. Thanks for joining me.
As always, if you're looking for additional resources or support, you can visit our website at principledacademy.com, check out our shop and our blog, and you can also find us on Facebook at Christian Homeschooling with Bible Principles, also on Instagram under Principal Academy. Thanks so much for joining us.
All right. Well, this is Heather Hall.
And this is Brian Hall.
For Christ and His glory.